Welcome to the X-Overland Podcast. At X-Overland, we're committed to living a life of adventure and to sharing what we learn in the hopes of inspiring and empowering others to boldly explore the world. Join the conversation as we sit down to share stories of overland travel and vehicle-based adventure with a broad range of compelling guests from around the globe.
Welcome back to another episode, everybody, of the X-Overland Podcast. Happy to have you here with us. And today we have a big topic to cover, a big topic. And that's why we're doing something that is a first for the podcast. We are bringing on three separate guests in segmented pieces and weaving them all together to address this topic. Leah, my co-host, is here with me, and she is a mother of two. I am a father of an 18-year-old who's now coming of age, so I've been through this, and I'm a former high school educator. So we're bringing a perspective to this topic of being parents, and in my case, a parent and a teacher. And the topic is education on the road. How do you teach your kids and keep up with their learning, schooling, while you're traveling, and whether this is overland traveling or it's you're just going on a massive adventure for 3 months somewhere and coming back, how can you accomplish this? Leah, can you add to how I'm trying to describe this topic and make sure that I'm getting this correct?
Yeah, absolutely. This all kind of started when we interviewed Brittany Highland of Hourless Life a couple of months ago. And she was really inspirational to me as a mom. Her son is 6 or 7 years old, as my oldest is 7 years old. And, they've been traveling full time. And I think a lot of the hesitation that people have with traveling for longer amounts of time, which is generally the theme of overlanding, if you will, it's more than just your weekend adventure. It's like, what do I do with my children? How could I possibly pull them out of school for that long or take on the responsibility of schooling? And what are the other options for that type of adventure when you have young kids? And I know it's something that I struggle with. Even like the longest trips that we've ever done is, 1 week, 2 weeks at a time, which isn't that bad. But if I ever wanted to go longer than that, I felt like I wanted to talk to Brittany. I brought on Rochelle Croft because they have taken their kids out for longer chunks of time. And then Christine DeHaven, because she had the experience of bringing on her kids full time on the road using a more structured, typical homeschooling format. So we picked these three families who have really taken three different approaches to having kids on the road. And that was where that's why I wanted to have this conversation with them.
Yeah. So the goal is, we hope if you're listening and you've always wondered, is it possible to take my kid out of school in some capacity to go on a massive trip, maybe a 1 year or a 2 or 3 or 4 year overlanding adventure, or you're just completely ready to go on the road, maybe for a decade or more. How can you go about educating your kid and making sure you can keep up with their schooling and make sure everything is credentialed? They will have the diplomas they need to move forward, get into college if they want to do that. Mm-hmm. All of those things. Leah and I think, have a very ambitious goal with this podcast to try to answer some of those questions. So we hope you enjoy this episode. We'll be back with an outro with our reflections on what we heard and our first guest is Rochelle Croft. So let's get started.
When it comes time to find a new adventure, OnX Off-Road is my go-to. This year, OnX Off-Road has added more than 3,700 new trails across the country in 2023 alone, and has added an all-new feature for elite members, Recent Imagery, which provides access to the most up-to-date satellite imagery available, allowing users to see more accurate imagery, which can be crucial when it comes to looking at water levels, snow melt, and more on those wintertime adventures. Elite members also get access to private land data in all 50 states, as well as exclusive discounts with some of the industry's leading brands. To learn more, download the OnX Off-Road app in the App Store and use code XOVERLAND20 for 20% off your purchase.
All right, everybody, we're here with Rochelle Croft, and we are diving into the conversation of education and education, of course, in the terms of like our children and how that plays into travel and overlanding and long term on the road and what that looks like from a parent's perspective and a kid's perspective. So Rochelle, I'm curious, with all the trips that you guys have done with the kids and the boys, how, like, what is your philosophy on taking them out of school? Can you want to dive into that question for us?
Thanks, Leah. I would love to dive into that question. and thanks for having me. This is awesome to be on with you, and you are doing a fantastic job. So,
Thank you. I'm so glad you're here. We're so glad you're back in the States to be able to do this.
Me too. Yeah. So, okay. Education. I get this question a lot, especially for our moms at Expo. So from day one, Clay and I have always had the philosophy of we always chose to put our kids in public school with where we're at in Montana and the town we're at. We have pretty good, a very good school system here. And because I also work full time, Clay and I both worked full time for many of all of these years, I knew that I did not have the bandwidth, nor did he, to homeschool them. Mm-hmm. And the bulk of the travel that we do, especially with our kids, is usually done in the summers when they're off of school.
Right.
So, and the other thing is especially elementary school, I would say like from K to fifth grade, they missed a lot of school.
Did they?
Oh yeah. But I'm not a rule follower per se. I'm more of like a guideline person. So if someone tells me my kids can't miss more than 10 days of school and they're in third grade, I'm going to say, too bad. Respectfully, too bad.
Yeah, exactly. That's where I think a lot of us struggle is like, should we be rule followers or do we have to wait till our kids are in the summer? You know, like that's where I struggle personally is what can I do?
Yeah. And I think it depends on what you're taking them out of school for. But at the end of the day, especially in the public school system, they're not, I'm sure this is different for a lot of many schools, but for ours in particular, they had good grades. They didn't really get behind. And if there was anything we could do, we would always let the teachers know. We'd let the principal know if it was a long duration of time. We want to be respectful of their policies, but at the end of the day, we're their parent and we get to decide what we're doing with our kids. So we would respectfully tell them, hey, they're going to be out of class for this many days and for this reason. Is there any homework they need to do while they're gone? Are they going to get behind? How can we help them if they're going to miss? And I think 9 times out of 10, the answer was, oh my gosh, that's such an amazing experience. They're going to get so much more out of travel. Don't worry about it. They'll catch up when they get back. They're not going to miss much. That was usually the answer I got. Now, as they get into high school, even junior high, if they're taking AP classes and harder things like that, you might find a different scenario from their teachers. Mm-hmm. But the longest we went was last year when we did Nordic series, Cy missed a month of school of his junior year of high school.
Yeah.
And I was like, one, I knew it was the first month of school. And the first month in public school is usually review. You right. all know, like there's a lot of time wasted there. And so I was like, dude, it's going to be review. You're getting back into the swing of things. You're probably not going to miss much, but I left the choice up to him ultimately. So we did the same thing. I wrote a letter to the principal. I said, hey, here's the deal. He's working with his family business. He's going to be traveling. Here's the countries he's going to. These are the things he's learning. Mm-hmm. And what can we do? I didn't give an option. I didn't ask permission. I just respectfully said
this is what we're
the
doing.
Plan. Yeah. And because he built up a good reputation, he has good grades. We have good relationships with the school and the teachers. I feel like that made it easier also for them to just say, oh my gosh, that's amazing. He's going to learn so much by travel. He's going to learn way more doing that than he is in this building. He should be fine, but I'll let all of his teachers know and they will reach out individually and let you know if there's anything he can be doing on the road.
Right.
And so, yeah.
So ultimately you felt pretty supported from the school system throughout the years and especially this long one with the month long being gone. And mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. When they were younger, not always. Like I'd always get the letter of your kid has missed more than 10 days of school. And I was like, and this is what they were doing.
Right.
So I my attitude come out a little bit, and I don't mean it to, but ultimately they're our kids. We are going to make the decisions we feel are best for our kids. We will always be respectful. We understand we have put them in their care in that public school mm-hmm. system here. Mm-hmm. So we will respect that, and we will let them know and communicate as much as possible. But at the end of the day, we're going to make those decisions.
Gotcha. Did you ever feel like on those trips you were responsible for getting the work done? And did you have any pushback from the boys on like, hey, you know, we got to take a break from travel and do the homework? Or it sounds like you didn't face that all that often, but if you did.
Yeah, we didn't because like I said, 9 times out of 10, even when Cy missed that month,
right?
His teachers said, hey, I want him to do a presentation when he gets back, and I want him to share about his travels and photos and write, like keep a diary or something, you know?
Right.
So it was definitely hard to get him to do that on the road. I was like, mm-hmm. hey, be thinking, you know, it's thinking ahead. So you're not cramming all of this in when you get back. No, you can't use Tanner's photos. You need to take your own photos. Like no cheating.
Here's a camera. Learn it.
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, math on the road was always the hardest if they were ever missing a lot of math classes, because that's the one that's you can get behind on real quick.
Totally. That makes me panic as a parent already. And my son's already only in second grade. And I'm like, I don't want to teach you that.
Google. YouTube.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's never fun for the kids to have to stop and do it on the road. And as much as you think that you'll be like, oh, well, we'll have all this time. We'll have time to do school. We'll have time to do this. That was never the case for us, but our travel experience is a lot different than someone probably living full time on the road. And that's part of your daily routine.
Right. Exactly. And I think that's a big reason why we wanted to have you on specifically, because I feel like there's a whole segment of us parents out there who want to travel, maybe not full time, but do these longer extended trips. And like I already find myself worrying about taking Nolan out of school for, you know, a week coming up in November. Like what does that look like for him? So I feel like it's a more attainable conversation for some of us to talk about these smaller segments. And, but again, when you're in the public school system, you do get that pushback, or I would assume you would get the pushback of like, oh, well, you missed too many days already. You know, what's the consequence?
Yep. That's what I always ask is, hey, what's the policy? Mm-hmm. And usually at the beginning of the school, if they had like an open house day or something, Clay and I would go around and just tell all of his teachers and principal. We would make sure to meet everybody and say, hey, we have a little different situation. We travel for work. This is our business. This is what we're doing. Our kids are going to be gone a lot from school, but this is why.
Right.
And we kind of would always front load whichever teacher, however many we could, the beginning of the year. And that always then helped those conversations of like, hey, remember, we told you we do this for work. We need to take him out for a week in November. This is why. This is where we're going. He's going to be learning this. You know, it's very hands-on. Most teachers are like, absolutely, that sounds amazing. Wish I could go with you, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I hope that's what our listeners take away from this conversation is that like, if you don't, you know, you don't have to ask for permission, but if you state what you're doing and you think come at it from the perspective of my kids getting this experience, what's way cooler than just sitting in a classroom all day. But that's a parental mind shift change for some of us.
And you got to remember the type of families and kids that most teachers are used to having in their classroom. Like I understand that we're not the norm. Like this is very different. So I'm not going to just expect that they're going to get it. But if I can go in first and have that conversation and kind of front load, I'll even show them our videos and be like, hey, look, I have, you know, this is what we do. Or if you can show them your Instagram or something that backs it up, that's just like, hey, I'm pulling my kid out of school, deal with it.
Right.
It's a very different conversation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And of course, with your guys' travel, I know that you put a lot of emphasis on learning about the culture and the history and stopping at those places that are like an absolute lesson for the kids. I mean, no worry to me there. But like, what would you tell a parent who is struggling with this idea of, you know, we want the whole summer, but maybe we need the extended month. But they're struggling to make that leap. Like what would you say to them?
Like if they want the whole summer plus another month.
Yeah, like I'm thinking, like, you know, sometimes our summer breaks are getting cut shorter and shorter. It gets to the point where we're only at like 6 weeks now for a summer vacation or summer break before school starts all over again. And really, like, to do a really long overlanding style trip, like if we want to go to Alaska, we need at least 3 months. At least that's what I'm budgeting. So you start to take in that consideration. Like, what would you tell me as a parent to like say, yeah, you should do that? Or wait until your kid is older, or like what?
So first of all, I would say 100% absolutely do it.
Yeah.
You will not regret it. Two, it's a lot. I've found, at least for our experience, it was always a lot easier to take younger kids out of school than to wait until they were older.
See, that's the gem of information that I needed right there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because, you know, if you think back on your own experience, once you got into like junior high and high school and your classes started getting harder, they start building on each other. It's a little bit harder to just to come back in and then catch up really quickly with where you're at. It's not impossible. It's very doable. But when they're younger, they go at such a slower speed because your class can only go as fast as the lowest common denominator in that classroom. So especially if your son is, you know, middle or top or whatever, and you know he can handle it, he's probably going to catch up pretty darn quick.
Yeah.
And I would say, so have the conversation if you know, like if you're going this, what grade is he going into in the fall? Or be next year?
Yeah. Nolan? My son will be in third grade next year. So he's in second right now. Gracie will be entering kindergarten. I don't know where time goes.
It just flies. So that's a great one to say, you know, at the end of that school year, front load your school at that point, because you probably won't know who his teacher is going to be. Right. Say, hey, I am taking these kids and we're going to Alaska for 3 months. We're going to be missing the first 4 or 5 weeks of school, whatever that looks like. And this is why. What can he put to, can I help him put together while we're on the road and everything he's learning, like a presentation that I can come in and do with him, or photos and maybe some cool bugs? Like Clay's mom, they would miss school a lot because she'd take the kids down to Texas to see their grandparents. And she would collect all the bugs or like these crazy things that you couldn't find here in Montana.
Yeah.
So they would bring that back to show and be like, look, on our travels, we found this or we saw this.
Cool.
And it becomes this kind of interactive, really fun experience for the classroom as a whole. And it'll build Nolan's confidence a lot, is what we've found over the years.
Totally.
So I say go for it.
Oh, I mean, okay. On that note, we'll get right on it. This is me. I'm very nervous. But conversely, you have, you know, your boys are older. How are they socially handling that when they're out and missing things? Like, I would assume they're missing potentially homecomings or, I don't know, major milestones as, you know, growing, budding adults.
Mm-hmm. That's an awesome point. And, you know, when you are committing to travel or a trip of that magnitude, something has to give.
Like, right.
You know?
Yes.
And so for Cyrus, I knew when we were talking about him doing that whole Nordic trip and then going to Iceland, I was like, you have a choice. You can come back halfway with me, but you're missing out on a month in Iceland. Mm-hmm. Or you can stay, have that experience, stay with the team, come to school a month late, but be there the whole rest of the school year. But you're going to miss things. And I left the choice up to him. We both did. Yeah. We were like, he's at the age he needs to make this decision for himself, because it's a lot easier when you're out in the field to be like, well, mom and dad made me be here and now I'm missing homecoming. You know? So it's a difference of, you have complete freedom to make this decision, and we're okay with whichever one you want. You're growing up, you're 17, you know, you're an adult, this is a job for you at this point. It's your call.
Yeah.
And I told him the significance of him making that decision before he left, before you're homesick and having those feelings, is you kind of need that stake in the ground you can look back on and remember why you made that decision, and to tell yourself that I made this decision when I was in my right mind. I chose to be here. And yeah, I'm bummed because he did miss homecoming, his first homecoming with his girlfriend. And it was really hard. And he got all the pictures of all his friends going and his friend group, and they're all back to school and they're having fun and doing all the activities that he missed out on.
Mm-hmm.
And those were like a couple tough days, which I knew they would be out in the field.
Mm-hmm.
But he was able to look back on that and say, I made the decision to be here. I knew I was going to miss these things.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I'm bummed and it sucks, but I will also be seeing my friends in 3 weeks or 2 weeks.
Right. Right. Yeah.
So,
I mean, that whole point of like, as a human, he gets to make that decision. And as a parent, even the younger kids, I also mm-hmm. have to stand on that stake and say, that was my choice. You know, or if I'm going to take the kids out for that month, you know, we're in the middle of Alaska and I'm going, what are we doing yeah. here? You
yeah.
know, we have to remember that, like, yes, you did sacrifice, time away from your community, the place that you know and are comfortable with, to face the uncomfortable, mm-hmm. and remember why you're there. I think that's such a bold statement for not just your kid, especially an older kid who can make the decision of whether or not to be there, but as the parent of mm-hmm. why we're choosing to take the trip in the first place.
Absolutely. And having younger kids, before you leave, you can kind of front load them and say, hey, we're going to be gone a long time. You're going to get homesick. You're going to miss your friends, and it's okay. Like, we're going to have good days and we're going to have bad days. But I believe, as your parent, that this is going to be an amazing experience for us as a family. I really want to have this time with you. And when you get back, you still have 7 months of school.
Right.
So always trying to give them that perspective, but acknowledging that, yeah, you are going to get homesick. You are going to miss your friends, but right. I'm still making this decision because I believe it's the best decision for our family at this time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think there's definitely a little bit of a paradigm shift for those of us with younger kids versus mm-hmm. those with older kids who can help to come to that conclusion on their own.
Yeah.
I mean, it's mind blowing to me to think that Nolan would at some point be 17. I keep trying to squish him down and he grows every time and I don't understand.
I know.
It,
it's horrible.
I know, those dang kids. But I mean, I think it's inspiring to watch you guys do it from an outsider's perspective and you're surviving. Look, you survived it. You made it. It's woohoo. I mean, I think for a lot of parents out there, it is one of those things where you think, I like my time, you know, during the school day where I get to, like, the kids are at school and they're doing their thing. And then it's my time to work or focus on adult type yeah. things. And then you're talking about making the decision of, if you choose to travel with your family or your young kids at any age, really, you mm-hmm. are with them 24/7. For 3 months or whatever, however long it is. It's a lot of and so coming back to that point that what you said about, like, you stick that stake in the ground, you say this is the decision that we made and we're gonna stick with it.
And you know what, if it got really bad out there and you're all kind of feeling like, yeah, this, we're gonna cut it a couple weeks short,
mm-hmm.
that is okay too. It is right. okay.
See, Rochelle Croft yeah. right there just gave you all the permission.
Just give yourself permission, guys.
Drive your own boat. Yeah. You can do this.
And I know this has been really popular going around in a lot of podcasts and things I've been hearing. And one of the most powerful words that I'm learning as just a very high achiever, competitive person, mom, and business owner is the word, the magic of the word and.
Oh, that's a good one these yeah. days. Tell us more about that.
Well, I grew up with a very black and white dad. So it was this mm-hmm. or this. There was no gray area or middle ground. And that's, for better or worse, that is how I looked at life a lot. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was, well, I'm a girl, but like, I can't be both. I can't be pretty and like to camp outside. Right? That's like a very rudimentary example. It was that kind of like, I was a tomboy. So I'm just a tomboy, you right. know? And I think there's so much power in this word. And yeah, I can like camping. I can like hanging out with guys and I can like getting dressed up and going dancing and putting on makeup and hanging out with the girls for a night. Like mm-hmm. those two worlds can exist.
Yes.
So if you're out traveling with your kids and your family and you're taking on this big expedition to Alaska that's 3 months, and you're like, this is it. We're going. We put the stake in the ground. We made this decision. This is it. And you get out there and it's, you know, you're going to have tough days. But if you just know in your gut, you're like, I think this will be better for the family if we cut this couple weeks short. You can do both and it's okay.
Right.
Doesn't have to be one or the other. Well, no, we said we were going to do it and this is it.
Right.
It could be, yeah, we said we were going to do this and it's not working out the way we thought, maybe for who knows what reason. We're okay to call it a little bit short, and we still had a fantastic time. We still are making memories. We still had this experience. It doesn't have to be one or the other.
Right. That's a beautiful statement. Yeah. I think one of the fears that I have of traveling, especially for summer, I'm in Flagstaff, Arizona, and I think climate wise, it's similar to where you are in Montana. The summertime is like phenomenal here, right? And I don't want to miss the summertime here. If I could, I would travel, you know, I'd be a summer chaser and go to Mexico or something. But, and I sometimes find myself worrying about like, well, if I leave for the summer, I miss out on all the things, you know, the social events, the beautiful weather. And, that scares me.
Yeah.
And so you have the sense of, well, I have to choose travel or summer. Right. And that's the opposite of the word. And
yeah,
you can have both. Summertime somewhere else is going to be phenomenal. And there will be other places, other things, other events, like your community is not going to go away.
No. Yeah. So. I hear you there. It was hard for me to do that because that was our Africa trip this year. Mm. We left in June, which Montana, the best months are like June, July, August, you know,
right.
And in September you're in fall, which September is great too, but I don't want to tell people that. So, which I just did.
Scratch that.
Yeah. So we, you know, we're like you, like we live all year for those summer months. And then we went from just getting into spring and just dipping our toe into summer. And we went to winter in Africa, which was more brown, crispy leaves, not green at all, brown grass, visually not summer. And it was cold,
right?
Which we were not expecting.
Right.
And then we came home and like the leaves were starting to turn.
Yeah,
and we're just like,
we didn't get a summer at all.
Summer. But I still wouldn't trade it for the experience we had.
Right.
Like we were okay with it. And we're going to plan a little break to somewhere warm and sunny this winter. So we can have a little taste of that.
There you go. I mean, that is just I'm so glad you brought the word up. It's just a beautiful phrase of, and life is full of ands, and things are not typically black and white, even if we convince ourselves that they are. And down to education for your kids while you're on the road, it's not or, like they're not going to miss out. They're going to be okay. Well, with that, I think we're going to wrap up this portion with Rochelle, and I wanted to just dabble in what's coming up next in this episode. We're going to be talking to Christine DeHaven, who is our marketing director, our EXO marketing director's wife. And so a little bit of backstory there. They spent 3 years on the road doing, I think, more traditional homeschool. So, which is just a different perspective. And I think there's another audience out there. I know.
So cool.
Super cool. So it'll be interesting to compare and contrast like what you guys are doing with like taking kids out for smaller portions of time, but still for like, even for me, like it's breathtaking. It scares me a bit. to fully committing to life on the road and what that looks like. So we're excited to have her on next.
I can't wait to hear from her. She's going to have some good stories. Good tips.
Absolutely. All right, Rochelle. Well, thank you so much for being here today, and we will catch up with you soon.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Leah. We'll see you later.
Awesome. Bye. Welcome. This is Christine DeHaven, and we are jumping back into this conversation of education on the road while you're overlander or while you're traveling. And we decided to bring Christine on. One, Christine is our marketing director's wife, and they have traveled, I think, 3 years. Is that correct?
Just about, yeah.
Okay. On the road. And so I'll have you describe like what you guys have done and a little bit about like what the path toward of education that you took for your boys while you were on the road.
Yes.
So I'm going to just throw it right out to you there.
Well, when we started, I have two boys. One was in sixth grade and one was in fourth grade. I had to remember. And at the time, COVID had been in full force. And so there was a lot of online schooling already happening. So it took a huge burden off of me as a parent who has never homeschooled before to take the leap for us to be able to go full time on the road. Some of our limitations were connection, because there was Starlink didn't exist at that time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of places we like to go, there are no connections. So, you know, we started with the homeschool, or with the schooling that they were still doing online. And we quickly realized that didn't work for us. The schedules that they needed, the connection that was required, the amount of time that was on the screen, we may have well just stayed home because it was so limiting. And so what we decided to do was to take it into our own hands. And then we started doing some research about options, which I'm sure anyone who's been interested has done all the research. We found a charter homeschool, which was a great blend for me, and I felt for my kids who had, you know, been in traditional school their whole life, and me who, and my husband who had no background in teaching. So the charter homeschool kind of held my hand as we navigated picking curriculums and schedules and even hitting standards, because there was a lot of concern that, you know, you already have a lot of mom guilt for doing, or any sort of parent guilt for, you know, just being alive. And then you add into it that you want to make sure that you're giving your kids the exact education that they deserve. So the charter homeschool really worked well for us. And we continued that all the way through. There were a lot of things that you can do to tailor that yourself. From if you have connection, you can be online, you can do virtual classes. You know, my son did at some point take virtual writing classes and English classes. But then also there are huge stints that we knew we wouldn't have service and Starlink still wasn't available, that we took it all into our own hands. So, you know, algebra without the internet is definitely a treat. But, you know, it was a huge learning curve for us, but it was a really good practice in patience for myself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The
first day of school, I remember opening up all, you know, we got all the curriculum. I spent so much time picking it out, and I opened up all the books, and it was like 10 different manuals for 10 different vehicles. And I'm like, I don't know how to do that. It was so overwhelming that I had to give myself some grace and realize that everyone was going to be learning new things. And so we fine tuned a lot of things, learning your child's learning style. Do they work best under deadlines? Do they like more independence? Do they need more structure? So as we got to know each other, I realized that my oldest really thrived with, I would give him his work at the beginning of the week and tell him what he needed to get done. And he liked to hit the ground running. He's like, well, I want to do all this math work today, and then I'll do my biology on Wednesday. And he was free to do that if he wanted to do it in the morning, in the evening, whenever his heart desired, because the way he works best is the independence. And he is responsible for getting it done, and he loves that. My youngest, not the same.
Of course.
Yeah. So he liked the structure, but he needed a little bit more reassurance in a lot of areas. And so we would structure our days based on if it was a travel day, if there was a connection, to tell you the truth, because sometimes you need to watch a video. You're teaching biology and, well, we're going to be on the road for these 4 days and we're not going to have any service. Well, let's do bio today. We can do math these next couple days. And we would kind of see how things would ebb and flow for our deadlines, because being with a charter school, you still do get your state funding, and therefore you need to hit your requirements, just right, as every school does. So we had check-ins every 10 weeks, and I would have to show proof of work. So each child would have, it's a lot of work on your part to prove the work, you know, putting up all the PDFs. And then we would have those 10-week meetings where we would get on and the kids would have to talk about what they've learned. It was a really good handholding situation at the beginning to boost my confidence as a teacher, to know that if I had questions, I could talk to somebody and they're like, oh, well, if your child's not learning this way, try this. I'm like, oh, that's so smart.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah.
We really felt like we were hitting our groove maybe about 6 months into using this system. And then we wrapped up that school year. And then when it was time for the next school year, I was able to make sweeping changes and it even got better. I knew the types of programs that I picked. If my child would, oh, this one's too reading heavy, let's do this more hands-on. My youngest really likes workbooks. Let's do one that has a workbook. And so it was interesting because the first year we would, you know, run into some problems because I don't want to read this, Mom. This is so hard. This is so much reading. Right. I'm like, I know, you're right. Okay, let's figure out a solve. Like, I'll read some, then you read some out loud to me. You know, we're going to figure this out. But the next time I was like, okay, well, let's do this different. You know, I'm going to pick a program that isn't so reading heavy. And you're still going to learn. It's just in the way that you learn best.
Right.
So it was a really interesting way to get to know my children on a different level. I mean, we were already living together in such close quarters.
Absolutely.
All a learning experience.
Yeah.
But I remember specifically we spent 6 months in Baja and this was before Starlink was available. And the connection down there, when you have it, is the equivalent of dial-up a lot of times. So I remember getting so creative with downloading, like we were doing biology for my oldest, and we would have to get so creative as to the videos that we would find that would support some of these theories and concepts he's learning. And then I would have to work so far in advance so that I would have those videos ready for him. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And so it was way more planning than I thought, but it pays off tenfold in the flexibility that it gave us. I mean, it has its perks, but there was a lot of planning that I had to do to make that happen. So.
Totally. Totally. Can I go back to like before you guys left the States and before you hit the road, how did you feel back then? And like, where did you with your research on how you were going to dive into this, knowing you're like, we're going to go, this is going to be a long trip. Like, what did that process look like? The preparation
Yes. Well, what I really thought was going to happen, you know, never really does. So what I thought was going to work was I thought, oh my gosh, this is great. We launched in February. So I thought, okay, from February to June, we'll do the homeschool. We'll do online school through the class.
The school that they were already in.
Totally.
Yeah.
That'll be great. And then I'll have the summer to figure out what to do from there. So that gave me, I don't know, 6 months to do a proper amount of research to figure out. And we quickly realized that the current situation was not going to be benefit. Like we could not be online all because they were online for hours and I understand why, but we couldn't do it. We just.
Right. And so we're talking about, this was the middle of COVID or like right when COVID hit, lockdowns were going on. Yes. Like you just got, I remember all of us were just struggling with the online, everything was online and nobody knew how to do it.
No.
So trying to do that from a distance too. Like, so you had hit the road. You were like, we're gone. Mm-hmm. We're leaving. We're just going to do what we can with what they're providing.
Mm-hmm. And the teachers were great with it. Everyone was really curious and they were all, you know, learning. They're like, where are you today? Everybody was so supportive. But when you're trying to hotspot from your phone and you have two kids doing it at the same time for 4.5 hours a day, it was not fun. So,
right.
Especially because the connection, even if we had it, wasn't fast enough. So at that point, I had started to look at different, I reached out, you know, as we always do, to the network of parents, like, hey, does anyone have any ideas or experience with X, Y, and Z? Because right. So many people at that time had already been doing research because they were unhappy with situations that yep. online schooling or COVID had left them with. So, I actually was recommended this school from someone else who had experience with it.
Okay.
And so that gave me a little bit more confidence in things, because there was a couple areas that you explore, and a lot of them did not offer a completely homeschool option. It was a virtual school, which right. was exactly the same as what we were doing. So I was like, yeah. no. I almost feel like I came into it a little too easy, because when we got it all rolling, it worked out very well. I think this type of school was also structured for more like student athletes mm-hmm. that, you know, are on the pro track. And so they have to have flexible schedules, and they had mm-hmm. adapted it for other type of students. And so they were kind of new with it. I know my teacher advisor, it was her first year, so we were learning together, which was great.
Yeah.
But yeah. So once we switched over, it was a big weight off my shoulders, because I knew that we could handle things how we needed to handle it. But then I also was, like I said, concerned that my kids would still be getting the proper education that they deserve.
So. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So did you stick with that charter school for the remainder of your travels?
We did. And it was really fun, because like I said, they're like, where are you? What are you doing? I'm like, well, you know, we did just swim with whale sharks, and we are learning about the ocean and the tides. So it's there's a lot of times, if you can pair it up, that things just yeah. get driven home. And
right.
it was definitely hands-on learning, which, I think the kids loved it. I know that we had always talked about our oldest going back to school in high school. Okay. My husband and I thought that social emotional, it was a really kind of a rite of passage for him. And it's something that he had expressed that he wanted to do as well. Okay. So we knew that that was something that was going to slow our adventure down. And he has since then gone back to in-person school. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was an easy transition for them. They did not have, were they exhausted? Yes. Do they miss, you know, traveling all the time? Yes. But they didn't skip a beat going back into traditional school.
So you guys left, I think you said your kids were 4th and 6th grade.
Yes.
Was this a trip that you had planned for like a lifetime, or was it like, hey, COVID hit and like now's the time, like why not go?
It was a COVID thing. When there are no other limitations holding you back, when you can work remote, when you can school remote, mm-hmm. it solves absolutely every problem. And we,
right?
like a lot of people jumped on it, and it was a perfect time for us to reconnect as a family. It really, was exactly what we had been looking for, but could never make happen. So,
right. Yeah. You tied mm-hmm. to other obligations and jobs with actual walls. Right.
Completely.
Absolutely. Yes. How did the boys fare, taking them out of, I guess everybody was out of the social aspect in terms of school at that point, but, how did they do missing their friends? And then the trip, was it getting longer and longer at that point? Or you just kind of decided we're just going to stay out here. It's working.
Social, we would do check-ins as a family, because it is hard. You don't, especially when you're overlanding, you're not in the traditional campground. So, right. You don't see kids as often. When we would go through campgrounds, we would see a lot of kids. I don't want to say a lot. We would see kids, and a lot of them would be on the younger side. So there were, we were missing some of that social emotional connection. My oldest would still be on Discord with his friends when he could. He still does now. He's still very close with them. Youngest is such an outgoing person that he's like, hey, you're my new best friend. Let's go. So anytime there was a kid, regardless of the age, he was all over it. But the check-ins really helped because we need to keep honest. There's no rules for our adventure. So does this work now, or do we need to slow down and take a break? You want to slow down for a minute? Okay, well, let's go. We're going to go get an Airbnb for a month and stop. I know we did that in the middle of Baja. So we were in La Paz for a month, and it was really nice for us all to just breathe because it can be a lot sometimes.
Absolutely.
And so, yeah, you know, we would check in. I know when it was, we did end up slowing down after our big push through Alaska. And it's because everybody found a spot that they loved and they wanted to slow down and stay there. So, you know, I think it was just open communication really helped.
Absolutely. But
they definitely felt lonely at times. I mean, I felt lonely at times too. It's not all sunshine and rainbows and Instagram posts, you know, it's just figuring out who you are and your limits. And so we all did that together a lot.
I mean, I have to imagine that's a very challenging thing, but I like that your comment about there are no rules. And I think that's a stigma from a parent perspective of, well, I can't take my kid out of school. I can't make this huge pivotal change. I can't, for what reason? Like, there is no rule that says that I can't do that. But like, I admire folks like you who just do it. You create your own boundaries, your own rules, and you figure out what works. How does that feel for you guys as parents?
I think my husband and I are, we make decisions very easily in that sense. Like, we don't, not that we don't think them through, but once we are very we're decisive. Okay. Yes. And so it is interesting. It's not anything that we thought, we knew in our heart that these choices were right for our family. So, when we would see people out on the road and they're like, oh man, you're so lucky. I wish my parents did this. It was helpful because I knew it was the right decision and I knew it wasn't going to be forever. But at the same time, getting that validation and feedback and just even seeing my kids go through these experiences and knowing that their bubble is so much bigger and their experience, they know so many things besides, you know, their hometown.
Right.
Really, I don't know, to see them thrive and do all these things I never thought they would do, what has been so validating. On top of that, it was very helpful that it was junior high, middle school.
Okay.
Because that is a terrible time to be
in school.
Yes.
Yeah. Socially, that's a really rough time for kids. Yeah. Absolutely.
I think that alleviated a lot of guilt. On top of that, I knew I wasn't tackling things like teaching my child to read. So for me personally, it was, okay, I know I can teach you this math. I know I can teach you these writing concepts. It was a sweet spot where near the end, like I said, algebra, I was like, okay, I got to dust this off. I need to relearn this. But it wasn't anything I hadn't tackled and I didn't feel confident in. We did get tutors for algebra once a week, once we had Starlink, and for biology once a week.
Okay.
And that was so that my oldest had someone to talk to or to talk through concepts when we both hit roadblocks.
Right.
So that was very helpful. And if we would have continued on, I probably would have stuck with a tutor for specific classes. Like right now he's in geometry. We would have definitely had a geometry tutor, you know, and it's not a daily thing. It's a, hey,
let's check
mark this down. Yeah. This is going to be for our weekly recap. Why doesn't this concept make sense? Mm-hmm. Can you help? And so that was amazing.
I think it's amazing that you had like the technological tools to say like, you know, we're out of the country. We are who knows where, and you're scheduling tutors, online tutors for your kids. I mean, the technology that's here now, like we have every tool at our fingertips to be able to make this happen. Very right. Cool.
And so knowing that, especially now with Starlink, I think if we would have started with Starlink, it probably would have been a smoother process because sure. there are so many resources available because the amount of books I lugged around. The Pelican case on top of the Tundra was full of books, but it was required. Right. And so you do what you do, you make room. So there are a lot of resources now that I think are completely available and make this type of transition easier for people moving forward as well. So
gotcha. Mm-hmm. So it's funny that you talked about the ages of your kids and like how like being in the middle school age. Yes, that's a great time to go. Because I just had this conversation with Rochelle Croft, and she was like, you know, the younger the better.
I know, it's so funny, right?
And I was like, oh, so like everyone has their own perspective, right? And honestly, I mean, my son is 7 and I'm like, I don't want to teach him how to read. That's the teacher's job. Right? So, but there are so many tools and technology and things that like, I mean, so what would you say to the parent who is like, I really want to make this happen, but I'm, you know, I don't know where to turn. Like,
yeah.
Or I'm scared to make the leap.
Yeah, that is hard. I think I can see benefits with all ages. And
right.
I think, well, you know what you know, what you've experienced.
Right.
But as far as taking the leap, part of it is doing it in smaller pieces, I think. Like, how are you working at, like, can you, when your kid brings home a worksheet with school, how does that go with you guys trying to get homework done? As far as taking not spring break, but you know, when you take a week off and they give you your pamphlets to go do something like that, see how that works for you. And also go through your knowledge of your child. How does your child learn best? Are they, you know, a tactile learner? Do they like audiobooks? Think about those kind of things. And then you can also start researching what is available to you and see if you can match up something that would really work for your kid. But I really think the biggest thing is no decision is final. If you decide you want to try something and it doesn't work, you can change it.
Right.
Evan and I talked about this a lot because in trying, even when we took them out of school and we tried this new program, we're like, you know what? It's okay if this doesn't work. We're going to give it a shot. And if it doesn't work, we'll figure something out. Because you know that you're not going to leave your kid high and dry. You're not just going to be like, oh, that didn't work. Let's just, all right, let's keep going.
We're done.
But you can change it. So nothing is final. Nothing is the end. And so I think the biggest thing is if you want to do it, do your research and then try it and give yourself the grace that if you need to change it or pivot, that is not failure. That is just, you're looking out for what's best for your kid and that's it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I the same conversation came up with Rochelle again, like this concept of things are not always black and white. Like the word and comes up in these conversations. You can be on the road and be educationally engaged with your kiddos. And it's both. You don't have to choose one or the other. And you're also not stuck in whatever curriculum that you're choosing for your kids. You don't have to be the teacher who's coming up with the curriculum. These resources are there for you. You just have to be willing to do the research to go out and find it.
Yes. And also reach out to your network of people. You'd be really surprised to, you know somebody who knows somebody who's in that world or somebody that can lead you to find a good tutor. You know, there's... We're really good problem solvers as humans. And so I am confident that just a little bit of time, people can solve these problems. I think it's a lot of fear, but sometimes I think, well, what's the worst thing that could happen? And then if I can handle that, then we're fine. So
there you are. That is just a metaphor for life in general.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
More than just this concept of being on the road with your kiddos.
Yes, exactly. So
yeah, that's awesome. Well, with that being said, the next conversation that we're having is with Brittany Hyland of Hourless Life, which do you guys know each other or?
Instagram. We haven't met in real life, but we've been chatting for years.
Yeah. So we'll put a link to their Instagram. Well, everybody's Instagram on our show notes, but I think their concept coming up next in the conversation is going to be really interesting. They have a 7-year old, I believe, and they've been on the road for his entire life. And unlike Rochelle, who's taken their kids out for smaller chunks of time, you know, up to a month or whatever. And then you guys who really dove into the homeschool life on the road for years at a time with older kids, they are doing a concept called unschooling. And so I'm interested to see what she has to say and how that compares to the rest of these concepts. But I think the moral of the story is that there is no one right answer. And like you said, as the parents of small kids, you know, we are always holding their best interests at heart. Mm-hmm. And there is no wrong way to do that.
No, exactly. So
cool. Well, Christine, thank you so much for being here. We are going to round out the conversation right here, and we will talk to you another time.
All right. Thanks so much, Leah.
Absolutely.
So now we have Brittany Hyland of Hourless Life on the podcast to discuss education. Hi, Brittany.
Hey, Jimmy.
Brittany and her husband, Eric, have been traveling the world with son Caspian for how many years now?
It'll be 10 in February for Eric and I, and for Caspian, it's his whole life that he's been on the road. He's almost 7, and we have been out of the United States for 2 years now.
And that's exactly why we're so excited to have you on the podcast to discuss education, learning, schooling, remote learning. There's so many ways to try to describe it, Brittany. I was actually struggling to label this, right? Because I, as a former teacher, I'm actually a former high school English teacher for nearly 20 years. So I'm not quite sure like how to put it, except that you are truly overlanding, you and Eric traveling the world with your son, and you are teaching him as you go. And you have a whole philosophy and approach to education to ensure that I presume he'll have the credentials he needs as far as diplomas or anything of that nature, but you're going about this in a unique way. And I'll just say up front that as a high school teacher, former high school teacher, I think it's awesome what you're doing. And I always encourage my students, if they have the opportunity, to get out, travel, see the world, and learn firsthand. So I can't wait to hear how you actually have done this with Caspian and are currently doing it. So let's hear about your philosophy and your practice.
So there are a lot of labels that you could give to what we're doing. And I think that sometimes that's part of the problem, is that we're trying to label things and put them within boxes. And what we're doing is definitely very outside the box. There's definitely an element of world schooling to how we're educating our son Caspian. And world schooling is teaching children through international travel. But the thing is that you don't have to do it the way that we're doing it. There are some parents who world school their kids over summer vacation. And so their kids are educated traditionally all year long, but during summer vacation, they take them to an international destination and immerse them in the culture, the language, the history, and all of that. But we're doing that with Caspian full time. And as of right now, we also have an unschooling element to how we're raising Caspian.
Yes, that term, that's the one I remember you mentioning. And I was like, I can't wait to hear more about this. Unschooling.
Unschooling. So in its purest form, unschooling is child-led education, where you're following the interests of your child. And traditionally, or I should say untraditionally, you're not using a structured curriculum. And so you are using resources. The parents are super involved to find out what their child is most interested in. And then they draw in resources and build it around traditional subjects to help teach their child. So for an example, say that my 6-year-old is interested in ants And I think we may even have talked about this on our previous recording. I can't remember, but say your six-year-old is interested in ants, where there's so much you can bring in. There's biology there. There's physics. How much can an ant carry relative to its body size? How much would you be able to carry if you were an ant? You know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And Caspian would be able to carry 400 pounds of stuff if he were an ant. And so it's just taking those questions, and children are born to ask questions. Like, we are born curious, we're born learning. And so I keep a list of his questions. And if we have some downtime, I open up that list and I see, what can we learn about today? Is it the solar system? Is it Incan mummies? What is it today? And how can we bring in math and science and writing in a way that ends up being really organic and child-led?
I am following, and I just want to, you know, as a former educator, I want to help listeners a little bit here, if anybody's struggling, because what I am hearing is interdisciplinary, what we would call in the academic world, an interdisciplinary approach to education. So instead of you have science class here, and that's in this room down the hall with Miss So-and-so, and you have social studies over here, and that's down the hall with Mr. So-and-so, and then phys ed is over here, and everything's boxed together and segmented and for the learner. And the unschooling approach, the student develops some kind of passion or interest, and the teacher has the ability to connect that passion or interest to the various academic disciplines.
Yeah.
Something like, is that about right?
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Jenny. Because the reality is, we're all our own people. We have our own interests, and the world needs all of our skills and all of our interests. And so with this model, you come to find out whether your child is super interested in science or math or English or writing. And it's not that you neglect the other things, but it's that you're equipping your child to really dive into and pursue what they are most gifted at. And I love that. And the reality is that our children today, many of them will have jobs that don't exist right now, because that's how quickly our world is moving.
Yeah.
And so it's a very out of the box approach. I understand that, but it's very exciting, and we see it working with Caspian. And we do meet a lot of educators, people from that field, and I feel very confirmed by the feedback that I get from them.
Well, I want to really dive into this, you know, as deeply as we can, Brittany, because I recognize the fear even and anxiety of parents who would be travelers with their children, but they fear not getting the education that the kids need, or they hear something like unschooling and it is out of the box, right? And there are a lot of people who are just, I think, afraid of some approach that's going to be out of the norm. And I'm hoping that we can allay some of those fears and get people to really understand that this will meet their child's needs in terms of traditional academic learning. And so, like, I'm thinking, from what I hear you say, I'm thinking unschooling could be done even if you were homeschooling. So, like, you don't necessarily have to be overlanding to have this approach to education, correct?
That's absolutely correct, Jimmy. But we found that travel, you are just constantly bombarded almost with new subject material. And instead of opening up our history textbook today to chapter 2, well, here we are in Lima, Peru, by some Incan ruins, and we're incorporating all 5 of our senses. And so we're not cramming for a test, something that we need to get an A on, and then we're going to push that knowledge away and forget all about it because we're on to the next thing. Instead, we're right there, we're touching, we're smelling, we're tasting, we're hands-on immersed. And so it's much more memorable. And then we can hear the child's questions and continue to pursue that line of thinking. And if I may, I mean, I think that we can talk about some common objections. Okay. So one of them is, what do I do when my child is in high school? Because I have a 6-year-old, and a 6-year-old is really different from a 16-year-old. And I understand that. I have a lot to say about that. But the first thing I'll say is that you do not need to have a plan for grades 1 through 12 when you start. That's not a necessity. You don't need to have the whole thing planned out. And so there's an evolution that can happen. So unschooling might work for us right now when Caspian's 6, but for whatever reason, it may turn out that as he's entering traditional grade 9 level, that it's not working for us and we want something more structured. And at that point, it's really easy to pivot. Maybe we go under an umbrella school that is helping to make his transcript for university, or we're starting to incorporate some kind of curriculum. Maybe it's a math curriculum and we're taking that grades 9 through 12. And so the first thing that I just think is so important to know is that I don't have this figured out through grade 12. And nobody else needs to have it figured out either. We can change every academic year and pivot as necessary.
I'm wondering then, is unschooling, like, is this a codified program with standards? Like, you know, like public schools today have the Common Core standards. And I don't have a lot of familiarity with remote learning, but I'm imagining that if you're homeschooling, say, you have to in some way demonstrate that the student has reached these standards for grades 1, 2, 3, up through 12. And that's how you're able to get the equivalent of a diploma using the form of education you're using, whatever that happens to be. Am I correct here? Like, is that what you work off of?
Yes and no, but this is really important to talk about. So every country has different educational laws. So for example, there are countries in Europe where it is illegal to homeschool in any form, whether it's unschooling or whether your child is at home and you're using a structured curriculum, history, English, all of it. It's just completely illegal in certain countries. In the United States, homeschooling is legal in all 50 states, but each of those 50 states has their own laws. And so depending on where your residency is, or for us, we call it our domicile, where our legal address is, where we vote and what's on our driver's license, that is
even though you're traveling the world.
Yes. And so our state is Texas, and Texas is very homeschool friendly, and there are no standardized tests that we need to take. There's no check-in from the school district, and there's no note-taking that we need to do as home educators. But other states are very different, and some of them do have those things in place. And so that's where you need to start before you begin this journey with your children, is you need to know what the laws are in your state. And it's the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. You can go on their website, HSLDA, and they will give you the laws for your state.
Wow, that is tremendously helpful. And talk about a podcast I wish I'd created when my daughter was born 18 years ago. So I had this kind of knowledge, Brittany, because I'm all about self-education and the approach that you're using, you know, where the student finds passion in something and you build the academic disciplines around their passion, you connect them to that. And I just think that a lot of people, they default to standard education, you know, the normal public school system or whatever it is. And they just don't think like outside the box. Like they don't realize that legally they can do other things. They have other options. So for you to create like a legal basis for what you're doing with Caspian as Overlanders, right? And help people with that process. I think, you know, I'm hoping will really open some eyes and allow our listeners to see what kind of opportunities are there for them.
And it's more than that too, Jimmy. I think as a parent, you may be able to relate to this, that we want the best for our kids. Yes. And so there starts to be some fear involved if we feel like we're not giving them the best. And for those of us who do not have a degree in education or a certification in education, there can be fear there too, because can think, who am I? Who am I to teach my child all the way to grade 12 so that they can enter university? Right. And that's one of the common objections that I hear. I'm not qualified. I'm not qualified as a parent to do this. But you are. You can be. I mean, it just takes educating yourself. And especially with COVID and how that changed our educational system, there are more resources than ever online. There are countless curriculums that you can use if you decide to go with a more traditional curriculum. That's not what we're doing, because we really want to use what's around us in our travels to educate Caspian and just see where the world takes him. But you don't have to start on our really non-traditional side. You can start by looking at the more traditional ways to do it and use the resources that are available. And for me, I thought that I wanted to educate Caspian classically, to give him a classical education, dating all the way back to the ancients. And that's a very rigorous academic form of education. But I didn't want to stop there with my research, and that's why I started to research unschooling. And as I got deeper into it and didn't stop at the surface level and my assumptions and my biases, but really found out what it was, it appealed to me so much and made sense, especially with our travels, that we would use that philosophy.
Wow. You know, and I was hoping maybe, you know, for some of our listeners who don't really understand what a classical education is, Brittany, if you could explain that in a little more detail.
Okay. I'm not an expert, but I know that I believe that there's three different stages that children used to be taken through in the ancient world, starting at the elementary level. And this is incorporating ancient Latin, you know, it's incorporating Latin, it's incorporating Greek, and you have all kinds of ancient literature that you're studying. And I'm really type A, and I love history and philosophy. And so for me, I was like, I want to create a leader who understands the way that the underpinnings of society work. Like, how is government built? How are economies built? And really give him those building blocks. And so that's why I was really interested in a classical education. But we can still incorporate that now. It's just that we're not doing it very rigorous curriculum based. We're doing it organically. And I know I keep saying that word, but it's really the perfect word for how we teach.
Yeah.
It's just as it comes up in conversation, we can talk about the founders of philosophy. And Caspian was just talking about Plato today, because we've been learning about Atlantis, about the myth of Atlantis. And Plato was the first one to write about Atlantis. And so he was telling my sister-in-law about the theories of what happened to this lost city. So my six-year-old is talking about Plato. And it's not because we were going through a curriculum. It was because he was curious and he wanted to learn about it.
Yeah, this is a great example, Brittany, I think, of what you're talking about to help anybody who's trying to clarify this. Let's say somewhere in the standards for your education is a piece on philosophy. And, you know, the student will understand the ancient Greek philosophy, including the works of Plato and Aristotle, let's just say, right? Now, a traditional curriculum, traditional schooling is, hey, everybody, next week we start our unit on Aristotle. And like it or not, you are assigned these pages to read and you better have them prepared. And you're going to have a quiz on Monday and then we're going to discuss it. End of story. Force fed, right? You will do X. Right. Unschooling is you're naturally out and about doing what you all do, traveling. Let's say at some point you are in ancient Greece, like looking at the ruins. Caspian is amazed and curious and you began talking to him about the ancient Greek philosophers, and then you introduce a book, a work of Aristotle's or Plato's, right? Now you're going to reach those same standards, but you're doing it in a way that follows the path of Caspian's curiosity and where you're traveling, rather than on the second week of October here at such and such high school, we start studying Aristotle.
Right. And so the common objection is, well, won't you miss something? Won't you miss some piece of knowledge that is integral to his adulthood if you don't go through the checklist, if you don't go through all the chapters, if you don't check all the boxes? And to that, I would say, again, that our children are naturally curious and they crave knowledge. And if we just spend that time with them, and instead of just putting them in front of a screen for a big part of the day, if we take away the screens and just talk to them, you would just be amazed at what comes up in conversation. And what we found is that already at a first grade level, we're talking about things that he would never find in a textbook before middle school or high school. He just wouldn't. He would never find that information. And will he miss things? Well, I'm sure he'll miss something, because we don't all know everything. And a textbook can only hold so much information. That's a whole other rabbit trail that we could go down.
Oh, totally. But that whole coverage versus, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But if I teach Caspian to love to learn, to know how to navigate a library and to navigate the internet to find reputable information from reliable sources, then you better believe that he can find that random piece of knowledge that I forgot to tell him along the way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
It's a whole new time, Jimmy, with the internet. We don't have to memorize all that stuff anymore. We have it at our fingertips. And so what if I teach him about critical thinking? What if I teach him about how to have a conversation with somebody who believes something that he doesn't? Like somebody who has a different opinion, how to have a conversation and navigate that topic, how to speak in public in front of people, how to be a good friend, how to travel ethically. Like these are the things that to me are so much more important and really hard to learn from a book. But things that I can instill in him as his parent and spend time on. And all the knowledge is at his fingertips with the internet.
Yeah, absolutely. Like what I see here with the model you're using, Brittany, is one, a need for passionate, well-educated parents who are as excited about learning as they are about teaching their kid. Like, so that, you know, because there's a lot of work here that's put on the shoulders of the parents to make all this happen. But for someone like you, and I'm guessing Eric too, that comes naturally to you too. And I would think a typical, you know, speaking from what I know, public and even private school environments I've been affiliated with and as a student and an educator, they can often get in the way and obstruct parents like you and Eric trying to really work with your kids in these creative ways and keep the spark of learning alive, because they are so heavily structured. And so it's like, I think those institutions are great for kids maybe who would never have the opportunity otherwise to ever be exposed to Shakespeare and Aristotle, say. But for kids like Caspian, who have parents like you two who are traveling the world and doing all these amazing things and are so passionate about educating your kid, those institutions can actually get in the way of that process. So, you know, I think it's everything that gets accomplished in terms of learning at a traditional school, from what I have experienced as an educator and what I see you doing, I would say it's fully possible. For people not to be deterred and embrace the challenges and go with it. If they have the same passion and spirit that you do for it.
Yeah, I agree to some extent, but I just don't want to discourage anybody who can't drive around the world or even people who can't travel full time. So I homeschooled from grades 1 through 12 and we did not travel full time. We lived in Corpus Christi, Texas, and we did have a group of homeschoolers and we did things together. We went on field trips together, had volunteering opportunities. And by the time I was in high school, there was also a co-op in Corpus Christi where I could go take classes on Tuesdays and Thursdays and do my homework the rest of the week. And my parents just got to choose. Are she going to take Spanish or is she going to do her math there? Or are we going to do math at home with a CD-ROM, which is what I did, And so I don't want to discourage anybody who can't start where we're starting. I didn't start where I am right now. But I would love to open people's eyes to the possibilities. And I think it just starts with questioning the traditional form of education and questioning everything we know about how it works. That's what it takes. You have to ask questions about what's done, why is it done this way, how did it come to be this way. And our current form of education was formed when we needed factory workers. It happened during the Industrial Revolution, when the economy of our country was changing. And yet education has hardly changed since that time. And we don't need factory workers anymore. We need critical thinkers. That's what we need.
Brittany, 100%. And what you are describing is critical thinking about education and how your kid's going to be educated and what schooling looks like and why it looks that way and coming up with alternatives. And so, yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Like, what's exciting to me is the unschooling philosophy that you're describing. You don't have to be overlanding the world to do this. You can be homeschooling, you know, right from wherever you live. It's an approach to education that you're describing. And it's really, you know, it's refreshing and it's exciting to me as a former educator, because it really addresses so many issues that I saw with traditional schooling, especially for some students and families, you know, that were so excited about learning and could do this type of thing, like unschooling, and the kids could get so much out of it. I'm hoping people are seeing what you're hoping, Brittany, like the possibilities beyond just, well, time for you to go to school, because everybody has to just go to school and that's what you do. It's like, wait a minute, there are other ways to think about this.
And what I loved about homeschooling myself, what I just wouldn't trade for the world, is how much time it gives you. It opens up your time as a child to read or to go apprentice under somebody. I shadowed a veterinarian when I was 10 years old because I thought I wanted to be a veterinarian. And I spent almost the whole day watching surgeries and found out that I cannot stand up during surgery because I do not have a strong stomach. And so that went out the window, but I'm really glad that I got to do it because then I could redirect and go in another direction. And those are just the opportunities that you can't have when you're sitting behind a desk Monday through Friday.
100%.
And I want to acknowledge too, Jimmy, that some parents don't have a choice. There are families where both parents need to work, or single parent homes where the parent needs to work. And I get that. And I definitely don't want to come across as judgmental in any way. What we can do is a privilege, but there's still so much to look into and explore, and who knows what can work for your family, no matter what your situation is.
Totally. You know, if COVID taught me one thing as a teacher, like having taught through it all, you know, there was such a push to get everybody back from remote learning. And what I found is there were some students who were thriving like never before because they were out of the social environment of the high school, which was not a good fit for them. And they didn't learn well that way either, right? So there's differentiation in learning. And COVID showed a lot of us that, hey, look, you know, these students learn this way and these students learn best over here. So I really push back against the idea that we all just need to be back in the box. And so I think the big picture that I hear you saying is there are different students and different families This isn't right for everybody, but it might be perfect for some people, and it's out there. And if you look into it, you might be able to do it.
Right. You won't know unless you start digging in and questioning.
So let's look at the results of some of this, Brittany. Before we go here, I know this is a big podcast episode. How is it working for Caspian? And how old is he? And how has it been to actually do this? And, you know, what does it look like now?
So Caspian is 6. He's about to turn 7 in December. And he is an incredible human being. And I have my hands full, because once you start encouraging your child to ask even more questions, you find yourself not having as many answers as you thought that you did. But I love that. I mean, that's the kind of person I want to be. I want to be someone who asks questions and can be passionate about things. And I just love it for him. And the world is big, and there are so many people with different perspectives and different skills. And he is able to go into an artisan market in Mexico and see a woman weaving, and study what she's doing and how she does it, and how does she make her dyes, and what is the history of what she's doing. And it's just every day there's something new.
And he's like, didn't you say here recently, I think in a pre-convo, that he's bilingual now, that like he can speak and read in Spanish as well as English, of course.
Yeah, so we talked about that when we were back in Ecuador, when we recorded with you and Leah. And so anyone who wants to hear that episode can go back and learn more about our travels and what we were talking about there. But yeah, Ecuador, which was about 2 months ago, was the big turn for Caspian in Spanish. We actually got him a part-time nanny, and she spoke to him one-on-one in Spanish for basically 2 days a week. And with the vocabulary that she gave him, he just needed a little bit more. And he was conversationally fluent. All of a sudden, it was like a light switch just went off for him. And he's starting to write and starting to read in general in English also. And so we try and supplement that with the Spanish too.
Well, anyone who studied education knows that the earlier you start on languages, the better. And it's really difficult if you're not living in an environment where more than one language is being spoken to naturally adopt another language. And so as parents, that must have been so exciting when you could see him thinking, reading, and writing and speaking in a foreign language, you know, as well as his native tongue, because that's just so expansive for one's mind.
Absolutely. And he's just so uninhibited compared to me. I still think about what people are going to think about my poor Spanish. And that's why I'm behind him now. That's why he can now speak better Spanish than I can. And so I just love that for him, that he doesn't have all those factors as a child that are holding him back.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah.
So
as far as the reading, I mentioned that he's starting to read, and we also used a really non-traditional, non-curriculum approach to reading. And I've written about it extensively on our blog at hourlesslife.com. If anyone wants to go read about how Caspian is learning to read, and it's not with lessons and it's not with any kind of curriculum, it's with a lot of reading. I mean, I've just been reading to him ever since he was a baby, and he's picked it up all by himself just from constantly being in books. And so again, I'm not telling you to do something that I haven't done myself. Like this really works, and not just for us, but you'll read about it from other unschoolers too.
What you just described in terms of Caspian's reading, Brittany, reminds me of a part of the novel To Kill a Mockingbird, the famous Harper Lee novel. I'm sure you've read it. Where Scout is, you know, in a normal school, and they're trying to force her to read in some particular way. And she's always already a super advanced reader, goes on to become a lawyer and a writer. Right. And she's like, I just sat on my dad's lap and he just showed me, you know, I followed his finger and I started reading, and he read with me and I learned to read. Right. So it's like, it reminds me of that. And it sounds like that's a parent investment too, like you putting in time to do that.
You're right. You're right. Yeah. But part of this philosophy is what our children learn in the first 5 years of their life is just unbelievable when you look at how they learn how to walk and how they learn how to talk. And we are not like giving them step-by-step instructions on how to do that. They're born learning. And then we switch it all up on them and stick them behind a desk in this environment. But what if we tried to continue doing what we did so naturally in those first years of their lives and just equip them, just support them in their natural curiosity and interests?
So I couldn't agree with you more, and especially like as they continue to get older and more mature, you know, the tendency is to put them in even more of a box in high schools rather than to give them more opportunity for freedom. It's strange, you know, but, I heard, so to answer the question, like, how's Caspian doing? I heard he's a strong reader. I heard he is learning a second language, Spanish, and is like, got it now. Like you're able to see that. I've learned that, he's becoming, I would say like a very well-developed human being in terms of his ability to work with others, understand different cultures, interact with others, think critically. So it sounds like this is working. Are there any shortcomings that you see where you're like, man, you know, it's not working in these areas, or I'm struggling in these places?
Yeah. I mean, I would say he's not as strong of a writer as I would like him to be, because we don't sit down as much as maybe we should and do some writing prompts. And so there are things that you just see naturally as a parent where we're really strong here, we're really strong here, and how can I support him in this other skill that maybe he's not as strong at? And so again, that goes back to the pivoting. Like, there's no reason to panic, you know, there's no reason to panic. We just need to invest some extra time and try and bring that up. And who knows, like maybe he will never be as strong of a writer as he is a mathematician. Like none of us are equally good at the same things, and the world needs all of us, but we do want to give him that foundation during this time.
Sure. You're a professional writer yourself, right? I have that correct.
I am. Yeah. I write for Overland International. So Overland Journal and Expedition Portal, as well as our blog. So I don't envision a world where he's not a strong writer.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Your standards are probably pretty high as a writer.
Jamie, and can I talk about college real quick?
Oh, absolutely. You talk about whatever you would like, and let's get into that. Yes.
This was just, it's the final big objection that I hear a lot, especially when it comes to unschooling, because it's like, it's child-led, it's not a curriculum. How can you measure it? And how does that lead your child into university? And so I just wanted to touch on that really quick.
Please.
So as a homeschooler myself, my experience was that when I completed high school, my parents created my transcript. Normally, that's something that a public school would produce and provide to the student. But in this case, I was homeschooled, so my parents made my transcript. And it had a list of the subjects that I had taken and my grades in those subjects. And so there needs to be a way for unschooling, if you're not going off a curriculum, to measure those things. And there is information on that out there. You would not be the first person trying to do that. As far as the university is concerned, they want to see your transcript. As of right now, most of them are still asking for an SAT or an ACT score. And that is the true measurement of academic knowledge, as far as the universities are concerned. And then, of course, it's your things like your personal essay. What kind of volunteering did you do? What kind of extracurriculars did you do? And what were your leadership positions? And you can have all of those things as an unschooler or as a traditional homeschooler. It's just a matter of knowing what the universities are looking for as your child applies, and then working on those during the 4 years of high school. And so, again, it's one of those things that if you as a parent have never had to even think about that, it was just done for you by a public school, it can seem so daunting to imagine putting that together by yourself. But it does not have to be that hard. It's just, you don't know what you don't know. And so get in there and see what the process is. And you'll find that it's totally manageable. There are resources for you as a parent, and there are a lot of people who have gone before you to pave that path for your homeschooling child.
Oh, totally. Like this, I see a picture here, Brittany, that you've described, which is find out what standards and legal requirements your state has, the state that you're resident in, for say graduating from high school, achieving grade level measurements, all of those standard things that would exist in a traditional education, going to a public school, or even in some cases a private school. So you find out what those are. You make sure you meet those. You put together your own transcript that reflects that you've met all those qualifications to graduate from high school, say, in that your particular state. And while you're doing that, you're looking into colleges, universities that you think would be a good fit for your kid, and your kid's doing the same, seeing what they require, SATs, ACTs, letters of recommendation, all the things you described. And then you're applying to those schools, and almost like you would if you went to any normal school. It's just those schools do a lot of that for you, including college counseling. They may have a counseling department, that sort of thing. But you can do this stuff yourself is what I hear you saying. And I think you presented a very clear path for how to do it, which I really hope people will be able to gain from, because that's, I think, the intimidating part when people are like, they're frustrated with their schools that their kids are in. They would like to have a different lifestyle, but they just don't know how to pursue it. And I think you've laid out a path for people.
And this is a huge passion of mine. So obviously there are things that we have not covered because we don't have time, but I am a resource for anyone who has questions, and they can reach out to me through Hourless Life. And I'm happy to talk about my experience as a homeschooler, as well as going into university, as well as how we're schooling Caspian.
Perfect. Well, I will have all the links and resources in the show notes for this episode. So just a heads up to everybody who's like, I want more. I want to know. I want to connect with Brittany. The resources will be there in our show notes for you to do that. And Brittany, just once again, if people are listening, they're like, I want to reach out to you right now. Where do people find you and Eric and Caspian and Hourless Life?
We are at hourlesslife.com. And every social media you can imagine under Hourless Life.
Perfect. Well, always a pleasure to talk to you, Brittany. And I know how challenging it is to get on these podcasts because you three are out there really traveling the world as a family. And I really appreciate your time and making the effort to get on here. We all do at X-Overland. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me on, Jimmy.
Wow, Leah, that was an expansive episode. My head is spinning with thoughts and some regrets and some things that I would do differently now that my kid is coming of age and 18 and leaving the nest pretty much. And I really hope that people learned from this podcast and just got the insight that, hey, it doesn't have to be one way how you educate your kid.
Right. I think that is an overarching theme for overlanders in general. We get so many questions about, well, how do I start overlanding, or, you know, what are the things that I need in my rig, or, and this is just an added element. How do families go overlanding? How do we incorporate their education? And there is no one textbook answer to that question. I think these three families are excellent examples of how, you know, you can approach it in a million different ways. And maybe you start off like the Cross family and you take your kids out for a month and see how that goes. Maybe you dabble in homeschooling for a year before you head off into an around the trip world. Around the world trip. Wow.
Yeah.
And then you get to, there is no wrong answer, and you can always pivot And I think that's a refreshing mindset, because I think so many of us get caught up in this idea of like, well, I have to have everything laid out and has to be perfect and has to be, I have to know all the answers right now before I can go.
Yeah, I love the way you framed that at the beginning of your statement. Several times where my daughter was sitting by the light of like a camp light or the campfire, writing an essay for school that was due like that Monday or Tuesday or something like that. And sometimes it was about the essay prompt allowed her to write about what she was experiencing out on that camping trip. It's like, well, you know, we're in 2023, there's lots of technologies available, and sometimes the best material is going to come from what you're actually doing. So I'm hoping people got a broader view of just approaching their kids' learning in general.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, from my perspective too, I often feel that I can possibly leave to go on this adventure because my kids have to be in school. And, you know, that's not necessarily the case. It does take extra work. It does take extra time. It does take extra resources. But like you said, you know, we live in 2023 with a ton of technology. I mean, we're talking Starlink wasn't a thing 10 years ago. That was really hard to do. But now it's like, it's pretty dang simple for those of us that have the access to that technology, and it is possible. So you can jump in if you want to.
There's just so many ways to go about this. And Brittany Hyland really opened my mind as a parent and a teacher to how, like, even if you're not traveling or on any kind of like adventure, if you're just homeschooling, there's so many unique and qualified approaches to teaching your kids outside of the mainstream approach. So I hope people see that from our episode.
Yeah. I mean, I think most what I want people to come away with is that they feel empowered to make decisions for their family that is best for them. And for a lot of us, traveling and seeing the world is very important. And so we need to encourage ourselves to incorporate our kids' education into that, not the other way around.
Yeah, I love that as a final statement. I will have extensive details in our show notes about how you can reach the three guests that we had on the show. I'm sure many of you will have more specific questions you'd like to ask them. They're all available for those questions, and they made sure to tell us to tell you to reach out to them with questions. So we'll have the links in the show notes for that.
Jimmy, don't forget, we also have on the X-Overland podcast website a new spot to submit questions or ideas for the podcast. So if you can head to xoverland.com/XO-podcast and just click on submit a question, and we can answer anything you have or forward it to somebody that might have a better answer for you.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm glad you remembered that. That's an exciting new development we've been working with on the team on the website. Part of things. So yeah, just everybody remember that. And even if it doesn't have to be a question related to this particular episode, if you have any kind of questions in general that are overlanding kind of questions or topics you would like to see us podcast on, please add them there and we will be sure and check them out and see if we can get them on air. Thank you so much. And we will see you next time on the X Overland podcast.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for joining us. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe and leave us a review. It really helps. We appreciate your support. And until next time, stay adventurous.